Highland Falls, El Paso, Clarksville, Watertown, and from other important military capitals around the globe, Eye on Defense brings the top military and defense issues into focus. Eye on Defense is proudly sponsored by Big Sarge Pre-Owned TA-50 Emporium and The Last Hope Jewelry and Pawn. And now, citizens of Earth, brace yourselves for the next episode of Eye on Defense. Defense, 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 defense.
All right, we're back, everybody. This is episode 245, excuse me, and it is evening of 20 March. Again, a short episode, no more than 25 minutes, I think. I think five or six stories, maybe even seven. We'll start with CENTCOM X, two from CENTCOM X, 18 March Red Sea update. On 18 March between 1 p.m. and 7:40 p.m. local time, United States CENTCOM forces successfully engaged and destroyed seven anti-ship missiles, three unmanned aerial vehicles, and three weapons storage containers in Houthi-controlled areas of Yemen in self-defense. And then on 20 March, today, between 10 a.m. and 7:40 p.m. on 20 March, a coalition aircraft successfully engaged and destroyed one unmanned aerial vehicle, and U.S. CENTCOM successfully engaged and destroyed one unmanned surface vessel, both launched by Iranian-backed Houthi terrorists from Houthi-controlled areas of Yemen. There were no injuries or damage to U.S. or coalition ships. So there's our two updates from CENTCOM X. Also on CENTCOM X was a press statement from U.S. State Department. U.S. State Department spokesman Matthew Miller, 20 March, ballistic missile defense and nuclear programs, sanctions. Kind of a wordy, tedious little paragraph, but I'll try to get through it. 20 March, United States stays imposing sanctions on procurement networks based in Iran, Turkey, Oman, and Germany that have acquired goods for Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps Aerospace for Self-Sufficiency Jihad Organization. Good grief, that is a long title. I'll read it again. Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps Aerospace Force Self-Sufficiency Jihad Organization, comma, that's one organization. Next is Ministry of Defense and Armed Forces Logistics, comma, the Iran Centrifuge Technology Company, comma, and other U.S. sanctioned entities that are part of Iran's military industrial base. Let's see. The United States is committed to using all available tools to expose and disrupt the network supplying Iran's reckless proliferation of weapons that destabilizes the Middle East and enables Russia's continued aggression in Ukraine. I had to throw Russia in there. This is from the Department of the Treasury. I thought it was a State Department statement, but the fine print says the Department of the Treasury's actions were taken pursuant to Executive Order 13382, which targets proliferators, I don't know if that's a word, of weapons of mass destruction and their means of delivery and their supporters. So I guess sanctions on those organizations I just named. And that came from CENTCOM X. Mas Agua. Next, while we're talking about that neck of the woods, this is from USNI, Sam Lagrone, 18 March. United States still developing Gaza Pier details as crews work to prepare components. This story is aboard the motor vessel Roy A. Benavides, which is a Army vessel, and they're kind of giving us an update on this Army Transportation, 7th Transportation Brigade that's going to build this pier on Gaza. This is kind of an update. So 2 weeks after the President Joe Biden ordered the Pentagon to build a pier to ferry humanitarian aid to war-torn residents of Gaza, the steel chunks that will make up the promised lifeline have been coming together in Newport News, Virginia. Army, Navy, and civilian stevedores are now massed at the Port of Virginia's Newport News Marine Terminal and working 24 hours a day. They are loading the pieces of the modular causeway and other equipment that will build the pier to Gaza and the floating dock 2 miles offshore. Under the current plan, the cargo ships will drop off aid at the offshore to be ferried to the pier by the U.S. Army watercraft. And a little bit about this vessel, Roy A. Benavides. Brian Carroll and the ship's chief engineer were on vacation when they got a call to ready the Benavides to sail. It was formerly a Navy supply ship. It's a 35,000-ton roll-on, roll-off cargo ship. It was transferred to the Maritime Administration in 2022 to join the National Ready Reserve. This is no joke. It's called the Bob Hope-class cargo ship. The Bob Hope-class cargo ship has an internal cargo deck with storage space of about 2.5 super Walmarts, which is big, and will ferry the pier parts from Newport News, Virginia, to the Eastern Mediterranean. Last week, the Army started moving the causeway pieces 18 miles down the James River from Fort Eustis, Virginia, to nestle against the starboard side of a massive cargo ship built for hauling tanks around the world. A pair of tugs push the modular causeway system down the river. Once in place, this ship, the Benavides, has four cranes. The four cranes will be taking the causeway sections from the water to the ship's top deck that will eventually form both the pier and the roll-on, roll-off discharge facility. Soldiers of the 331st Transportation Company are part of an overall force of 500 soldiers from the 7th Transportation Brigade, and they're heading towards to the Eastern Mediterranean. On Tuesday, four of those vessels left Fort Eustis for a 30-day Atlantic crossing. Excuse me. Unlike the flat-bottom Army vessels that top out at 10 knots and have to pick their way in a southern route to avoid bad weather, which is what they're doing, the Benavides can cross the Atlantic at 24 knots and reach Gaza in about 2 weeks. Officials at the pier will not say when this vessel is getting underway, but apparently they're going to try to time it so it arrives whenever those other vessels arrive. Cyprus is now set to be the staging base for aid coming into Gaza. Several defense officials have told USNI News over the last week that the commander of the operation is still unclear, which is odd. Likewise, the United States has not settled on a partner on the ground who will both do the physical work of anchoring the pier to Gaza and offering a layer of protection to U.S. soldiers working on the pier. In his speech, President Biden said no U.S. troops will set foot in Israel. That's a pretty good update right there. We'll all see this happen in about 30 days, or actually about 23 days. Moving on. What's going on with Rafah? So here is Times of Israel today from Lazar Bergman and Jacob McGid. Times of Israel, Netanyahu says it will take some time until IDF launches an offensive in Rafah. As Israel and the United States continue talks on the southern Gaza city, Rafah, with top Jerusalem officials set to hear the American proposals in Washington, Anthony Blinken to hold discussions during his visit on Friday. So I guess Anthony Blinken's headed to Israel again. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said on Wednesday, today, that he would soon approve plans to evacuate the civilian population from Rafah ahead of an expected major operation in the southern Gaza city. At the same time, he acknowledges that preparations for the operation will take some time as Jerusalem continues its dialogue with Washington amid intense American concerns over a potential civilian cost of the cities that is both Hamas's last major stronghold and the last refuge of over 1 million refugees. Here's a quote from Prime Minister Netanyahu. He says, "While we are preparing to enter Rafah, which will take some time, we will continue to operate with all of our might. We will continue to operate in Khan Yunus, in the central camps, for the elimination and capture of senior Hamas officials as we did at Shifa Hospital, while eliminating hundreds of terrorists." Netanyahu made this statement 2 days after a phone call with U.S. President Joe Biden on the state of the war and plans for Rafah. During the call, President Biden effectively ruled out support for a major ground offensive in Rafah. That's from U.S. National Security Advisor, of course, Jake Sullivan. Two senior U.S. officials told Times of Israel on yesterday, that the United States will present alternative plans on how Israel can continue pursuing Hamas without launching a major ground operation in Rafah during an upcoming meeting with visiting Israeli delegation in Washington. Jake Sullivan says the key goals Israel wants to achieve in Rafah can be done by other means. In a Wednesday statement, Prime Minister Netanyahu said, as I promised you time and again, we are determined to achieve absolute victory and we will achieve it. How much more of this? A couple more paragraphs. The United States came out against Israel's plan to launch a major ground offensive in Rafah this week and instead pushing for more limited operation in the city and other parts of Gaza, targeting Hamas military leaders. Washington also seeks to secure the Egypt-Gaza border to prevent continued smuggling, a surge of humanitarian aid through the new access points, and a promotion of a viable Palestinian Authority-linked alternative to Hamas rule. Almost done. The United States aims to discuss these alternative plans with two of Prime Minister Netanyahu's top aides, Strategic Affairs Minister Dermer and National Security Advisor Hanegbi. I'm probably saying his name wrong. On Sunday in Washington. And these issues will also obviously be on Blinken's agenda when he arrives in Tel Aviv on Friday. Blinken will also discuss ongoing negotiations to secure the release of the hostages. He will also discuss the need to ensure the defeat of Hamas, including in Rafah, in a way that protects the civilian population and does not hinder the delivery of humanitarian assistance and still advance Israel's overall security. That's it. Excuse me while I drink some water. Quick story here from Defense Security Cooperation Agency via Breaking Defense, Lee Farron, 19 March. U.S. greenlights $2.2 billion deal with Bahrain for Abrams tanks. United States State Department today approved the potential sale of 50 M1 Abrams tanks and other equipment to the Gulf nation of Bahrain in a deal worth $2.2 billion. The island nation, which is a close ally of the United States and also hosts the U.S. Navy's Fifth Fleet, requested 50 of the M1 A2 SEP V3. SEP V3. They also want combat recovery vehicles, assault bridges, machine guns, and a host of other equipment. Sounds like Poland. The M1A2 SEP V3 is the world's most advanced Abrams. The U.S. Army was planning a relatively modest upgrade to a SEP V4, but of course we know the Army decided in September not to do that and pursue an ambitious next-gen Abrams, which will be the M1E3. Side note. That's it for that story. So how many do they want? 50 for a total of $2.2 billion. So 25 will get you $1.1 billion. Good at math. Here we go. Ukraine, Czech lead bulk ammunition buy for Ukraine picks up steam. Remember, we talked about this. This is like the third time we've talked about it. Remember the Czech president, Pavel, said, I know where 500,000 rounds are. What? Yeah, I know where a bunch of rounds are. I just need the money to go get them. Of course, I'm making light of it. But essentially, that's what he said. So people are starting to pony up money for it. He says, all I need is the money. I'm going to get it. So here's the story. A proposed Czech lead bulk artillery ammunition purchase for Ukraine is picking up steam as countries commit to bankrolling the effort while sourcing shells from non-European vendors. This is actually a very good story by Elizabeth Goslin Malo. Defense news from today, 20 March. Czech President Pavel said in February that Prague had identified 500,000 155 shells and 300,000 122 shells outside the EU that could be sent to Ukraine if we could only find the money. Shortly after this announcement, about a dozen countries joined the mission, collecting millions of dollars. So far, Pavel's government has succeeded in gathering support of almost 20 other allies, including Canada, Germany, France, Norway, the Netherlands, and Belgium. Speaking at a 19 March meeting of the Ukraine Defense Contact Group, they're still doing that, by the way, in Ramstein, Germany, German Defense Minister Boris Pistorius said Berlin will pay for 180,000 rounds, which, to be fair to the Germans, they've been ponying up a lot of money and a lot of stuff. A lot of people have given the Germans heat, but to be fair, they've put up a lot of stuff. Moving on. Defense officials in Berlin declined to put a price tag on the commitment. Some of the most recent members to join are Sweden and Portugal, which said on 14 March that they contributed $32.6 million and $108.8 $32.6 million, respectively. Those are U.S. dollars. So Sweden gave $32.6 and Portugal $108.6. So Sweden already contributing as a NATO member. According to the recent Wall Street Journal report, the Czechs have marked an additional 700,000 shells that could be possibly brought for Ukrainian troops. This would bring the total purchase to 1.5 million rounds at a cost of $3.3 billion, the newspaper reported. So the Czech says, we know where 700,000 more are, in addition to the ones we just said. Experts have pegged Russia's firepower advantage at 5-1 for Ukraine, with Russian forces firing as many as 10,000 shells per day compared to 2,000 by Ukraine. Questions still remain how quickly the Czech-led initiative could bring fresh ammunition to frontline troops in Ukraine. Czech National Security Advisor Tomáš Pohár has said that the first rounds could be shipped by June, which is not too far away. Officials in Prague have made it clear they are ready to negotiate with almost any third country vendor that could commit to making a contribution to a bulk purchase, with few exceptions, including North Korea. Leaders in France, initially apprehensive about buying from abroad, have come around on the subject. Here's a quote. The Czech initiative is extremely useful. We support it and we will participate in it. That's from President Macron. He said in Prague on 5 March following a meeting with his Czech counterpart. It consists of looking for ammunition everywhere it is available and is compatible with the equipment we have delivered. And finally, the German newspaper Bild, B-I-L-D, reported this month that some of the third countries from which Prague has managed to source the rounds include South Korea, South Africa, and Turkey. That's a very good story. Done. Next. So here we go. We got an Indo-PACOM story. So we've done CENTCOM, UCOM, and now Indo-PACOM. Haven't done this in a while. 19 March, Bryant Harris, Defense News. So this is the unfunded wish list. So every, you know, the DOD's got a budget. But then the services, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, Space Force, and the COCOMs, and we know who the COCOMs are. I should maybe do another program on that. Haven't done one for a while. But the COCOMs are supposedly asked for an unfunded request. In other words, it's not in your budget, but if you had the money, extra money, what would you buy? I'm simplifying, of course. So anyway, I've seen three stories on the internet. One was from the Marines unfunded list. I almost did that, but I decided not to do it. Maybe I'll get to it. Maybe I should get to it. The other was from Southcom unfunded list. And then one was from Indo-PACOM. And that's the one I decided to do because I figured we'd do Indo-PACOM, UCOM, and CENTCOM. So probably the next episode I'll do Southcoms. So here's Indo-PACOMs. Pacific Force wish list seeks $11 billion more than defense proposal. I kind of gave you the backstory on that. Indo-PACOM is asking Congress for $11 billion more than the FY25 budget request. Actually, this is three times more than they wished for last year. So I guess they won about $3 million last year. Now they won $11 million. Much of this money will go to construction projects and infrastructure to host U.S. forces in the region, in the Indo-Pacific region. They also want some classified space programs, some munitions, and Guam defense. You figure Guam would definitely be in there. So we're kind of go down line by line. Not real long, real short, actually. First, the largest component of the list by far is military construction in the Indo-PACOM region, with $3.3 billion requests to enable Indo-PACOM to develop and deliver footprint requirements in a timely manner. The military construction amount is alone nearly the equal to the $3.5 billion unfunded priorities list Indo-PACOM submitted last year. Remember I told you it was three times as much? Let's see. Indo-PACOM requests to beef up military construction in the region comes after Congress recently renewed assistance to Pacific Island nations of Palau, Micronesia, and Marshall Islands, which will provide military access for U.S. forces in return. Meanwhile, the Philippines is expected to begin work in numerous base upgrades this year after a recent agreement to enhance basing cooperation with the United States. And then another $580.7 million of the list will go to military campaigning in the region, with the bulk of those funds directed toward the Army. What that means, you know, exercises in Australia, exercises in Japan, military exercises in Korea. Moving on. Additionally, $1.4 billion will go to classified space programs. Half of that will accelerate the development of space-based sensors used to counter missile threats, and the rest would go to resource, quote, space control and enabling capabilities. Let's get to munitions. They want more than $1 billion for munitions to accelerate the development and procurement of maritime strike Tomahawk cruise missile. They want $766.9 million for the Navy to procure more of the SM-6, Standard Missile 6 weapons, and $396.9 million for the Navy to accelerate fielding the Hammerhead mines designed to be delivered by unmanned underwater vehicles and service vessels. For Army munitions, they're asking for $390.7 million of precision strike missiles. For the Air Force, they want $298.4 million for joint strike missiles and another $105.1 million to buy long-range anti-ship missiles. And finally, when it gets to the Guam stuff, the command is asking for $430 million to develop a missile defense system in Guam against ballistic, hypersonic, and cruise missile threats. Almost done. It is unclear how much funding Congress can provide for either FY24 or 25. The military combatants and services are legally required to submit unfunded priorities lists to Congress every year. So there you have it. The combatant commands and the services must do this every year. So today we covered Indo-PACOM. Next episode we'll probably do SOUTHCOM, and then at some point we'll probably get into each service. It's kind of tedious stuff, but I like it. What's left? One more story. This is Replicator. I haven't really messed with this. Well, I think we talked about it once when Deputy Secretary of Defense Hicks talked about Replicator. I think I did a story on it. I might have done one more, and I haven't touched it for about 6 months, so I'm touching it now. Army has one unmanned system in Replicator's initial tranche. Three others in mind for the next go official. Of course, the official for the Army is, you guessed it, the Honorable Doug Bush. This is from Ashley Roquet, 20 March. Pentagon leaders remain cagey how they're picking and financing an ambitious plan to crank out unmanned systems under a new Replicator initiative. But an Army senior official today said the service has at least one big ticket item in that first tranche. Doug Bush, is that senior Army official. Here's a quote. In the Army's case, we had something that we're already working on that was similar to Replicator's requirements, so we nominated it, said Doug Bush at the National Security Innovation Base Summit. And luckily, that made the cut, so that's a win for the Army. Bush added, so far, the Army is Replicator's biggest participant in terms of quantity. Because this is a DOD program, right? So every service has a shot at it. So the Army so far has got something in it. The first Replicator iteration is focused on countering China's military mass by cranking out, quote, multiple thousands of attritable autonomous systems across multiple domains within 2 years. I think this is the author's addition. Think unmanned surface vessels and loitering drones. There is a difference between drones and loitering, right? Loitering is kind of a munition, loitering munition, and drone is something that comes back. Well, you could bring a loitering munition back, but make sure it doesn't blow you up, right? Anyway, that's obvious. Bush previously told Breaking the Fence the service proposed three unmanned systems for the first iteration of Replicator, and there have been subsequent reports that the Switchblade 600 one-way attack drone is a munition. More than a drone, it's a munition, was selected. Breaking Defense has not independently confirmed that reporting, and today the Honorable Doug Bush did not disclose. So that's it for the Army. At least one Navy unmanned surface vessel has also been picked for Replicator's first round, according to USNI News. And the Air Force Vice Chief of Staff, General James Sliff, insinuated that his service will need to wait and at least until round 2/tranche 2. So it didn't look like the Air Force got anything in this first round. Breaking the Fence reached out to the Air Force for details, and a spokesperson said the service did not request replicator funding for FY25. However, Doug Bush told reporters earlier this month that his service also didn't have a specific replicator funding line in 25, which means the additional fund for selected systems could simply be included in under official programs, a funding classified pot elsewhere in the budget, or something else. Ambiguity, I said it right. Did you hear that? Ambiguity, first time out the gate. Over the initiatives comes in part at the behest of Deputy Defense Secretary Kathleen Hicks. She disclosed that the Pentagon is asking for lawmakers to pony up $500 million for replicator in FY24 and is seeking an additional $500 million in FY25. As details in the initial replicator systems continue to trickle out, Hicks and other department officials are eyeing the next iteration. Doug Bush told Breaking the Fence that the Army is again going to put three systems on the table and could hear back on which ones, if any, are selected around 1 October. So that is like our second, potentially third replicator story. I can't remember if we've done two. I know we did one, so let's just say this is our second. I guess we'll do another one at some point. And that's it. 2:45 is done. 26 minutes, a little bit longer, but that's okay. I kind of like doing these quick episodes. So 2:46 is in the books. Thank you very much for listening, and good night.